Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 40 on Wednesday, the 4th of May, 2016. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew.
We made it through the intro without any Star Wars Day jokes. Long may that continue.
Yes, yeah, please.
I've been being very good about it. busy week?
Yes. Yes, busy week, feeling ill.
Aww.
My turn. You were the sick boy last week.
I know. The trouble is I can't even make fun of you because I was feeling like rubbish last week. So yeah, I can sympathise.
But because you were such a trooper and fought through it all, I've had to pitch up and appear and do something.
You're already worse than me because we're already delayed by a day, so it's fine. So, meanwhile, been lots happening actually. I was a bit worried we were going to be short on news, but then everyone came through just after the bank holiday there, making sure they got all their press releases out between the British bank holiday and the European bank holiday tomorrow. So it's good stuff. So speaking of European news, Porsche research and development boss Wolfgang Hatz has left Porsche after many years. They say absolutely not to do with Dieselgate in any way, shape, or form. There's been no evidence has been found to suggest he's been involved in any of that scandal. But at 57 years old, he's decided to leave Porsche of his own accord after working there for 14 years. He was head of the R&D department. Gave us such vehicles as the 918 Spider and, of course, the object of many damp tissues, the 911 GT3 RS. one of the last key things that he worked on there just before deciding to leave was, of course, the Mission E concept car from the end of last year, which certainly spurred me on to point out that 2016 was going to be the year that the big manufacturers took on Tesla at their own game. A fantastic looking thing and brilliantly accepted and welcomed right across all the reports I read anyway. Everyone liked it.
Mm.
A slight bum note, he also led development of the Panamera initially, but we'll talk more about Panameras later on, I think.
No, that was Steiner, Michael Steiner.
Oh, was that Michael Steiner? Oh, pardon me, that was Michael Steiner that's replacing him. Yes, that's what happens when you don't read stuff properly. So, yes, he is being replaced by Michael Steiner, who's moving across from his role as head of quality management within Porsche, which he's held since 2011. So a safe pair of hands, I would imagine, taking over. So yes, that should be interesting.
Mm. Well, continuing sort of with Dieselgate, the UK government has announced that they're going to start doing what has been dubbed surveillance test of vehicles,
which is really overly dramatic.
Yes, it's like raiding offices. No, you went. You visited them, didn't you? No, we all have to use these more and more macho sounding language and ridiculousness that it is. But essentially, what's going to happen with the surveillance testing is that they're going to pick random cars from random manufacturers and just check that they still comply with the will be the revised and the new real driving emissions tests that. Apparently beginning next year.
Yeah, so it's basically a case they'll be going out, they'll be, I don't know, borrowing, purchasing, whatever, vehicles that are available to us out in the marketplace and testing those as well as the initial ones submitted for testing by the manufacturing, just to make sure that the production matches the initial samples. It's not really evil surveillance. When you first read that, you think, oh gee, they're going to be watching us all and just pulling us over at the side of the road. I seriously do not believe that's
well, the picture in AutoCar didn't help either, because it was one of those smart motorway gantries, so it did look like you were being spied on, and that's not what it's about at all.
Absolutely not.
But in a rare moment of me being fair to the government, we were discussing before, I don't think there's another way they could really do that.
No, I mean...
I think this is... I mean, there isn't a perfect way to do this, but I think that's as close as you're going to be able to get, is they just randomly come and select the cars or the components and test those and just check they still are doing what they said that they were doing and to the levels.
Yeah, and as I said, it's straight out of manufacturing. This is totally par for the course in food manufacturing, in agriculture, in just about any kind of manufacturing like that, aircraft manufacture, whatever. This is absolutely par for the course, and this is a the most realistic way of doing it, really, and making sure things continue to be made to spec. So I don't have an issue with it. I think it's quite good, actually.
Yeah. Right, should we move on to some real news now?
Yes, move on to some interesting stuff. Volvo. Volvo are to launch the UK's biggest autonomous driving program. This is not just in the UK, it's also going to take place in Gothenburg, funnily enough, in Sweden. And Volvo was starting a program in 2017, which basically, I don't know if it gives a lens, I imagine, XC90s to real people. And these are going to be, mostly autonomous driving vehicles. And the reason for doing it with real people who have real people going around their everyday jobs is so that they're actually gathering data based on how people actually use vehicles. Now, the reason I'm making such a big deal about this is that stuff like many of the other autonomous vehicles that are going around out there, so some of the Google cars and stuff, they are being driven and driven and driven and driven and driven, and they're being driven in shifts, and people are swapping over, and they're driving on loads of roads, and they're driving in loads of traffic, and they're getting lots of experiences, but they're getting those experiences rather more for the sake of getting the experience rather than for the rather than to understand how they will be used in real life.
This sounds similar to Jaguar's autonomous investigation or stuff, because they talked about, didn't they talk about how they wanted real drivers to use the cars so they could really understand what real drivers do rather than what an algorithm thinks a driver should do.
Yes, and I really, really wish I had made it. I was at a conference the other week, but I couldn't. Unfortunately, I had to go to Paris instead on the second day instead of being at it for the second day, which is a shame because the talk that was all about this kind of stuff by the consultancy Bearing Point was on that second day, and I missed it because I would have really liked to have heard all about their experiences with JLR and doing that kind of stuff. But yes, I believe that was the same. Sorry, I'm way off on a tangent as usual. But yes, I rather think that is the case. It's all about, it's great. We've got the mass data. Now let's get the data about users actually using them and how we can apply that to make people's lives better. There's a fantastic video on the auto car coverage of this story, obviously produced by Volvo themselves, which tells you all about the what's and the wherefores and sort of illustrates what it is that they're really outlining. And I'd recommend, how many minutes is it? It's 5 minutes or so. Yeah. Oh, 2 minutes 52. There we go. Excuse the noise that starts. 2 minutes 52 there of your time to watch it through and just understand what they're doing, because it explains it way, way better than I can. Basically. So yeah, the whole aim, of course, is to try and reduce the number of accidents on our roads, and it's part of that. No deaths and serious injuries in a Volvo?
I think so. That's one of their major.
it's a major part of that, and it'll be in Gothenburg. It'll be here, and they're talking about having another one in China as well. So that should be very interesting.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. It's good stuff.
Yes.
I love Volvo's approach to all of this kind of thing. I really do. Yeah. And I'm not just saying that. I really like their approach to the challenges facing us all in motoring over the next few years.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Moving on.
I'm back. Yes.
Formula E. It's been a while since we've mentioned anything. And this time it's not going to be good news. Apparently, unless Moscow sort themselves out and confirm there is going to be road closures, the proper road closures they need, then there is going to be no Moscow E-Prix.
Yes.
So,
But I'm not... Reading between the lines of this Autosport article, link will be in the show notes, of course. Between the lines of this Autosport article, I'm not convinced that people are going to shed too much of a tear for that. It's kind of funny. You know how normally whenever you get things and you speak to racing drivers, then they're, we've got a race. We really got a race. There's loads to go for. There's every chance of everything happening. We really got to make it in the race. Whereas when you read this, it's slightly different. So, you know, there's rivals for the championship, Lucas Degrassi and Sebastian Buemi, you know. Lucas Degrassi saying it's so close it doesn't really matter. I don't think it makes a huge difference if one race is dropped or not. I'd like to do it, but I don't think it changes much. And Sebastian Buemi is saying, well, it's good to have more races. It'll be a shame to lose Moscow, but we'll take it as it comes. If we go there, we'll try and win, and if not, we'll focus on London. There's something in there that doesn't sound like normal race driverness. I don't really think they wanted to go to Moscow, to be honest. I think that there was a certain... That people were, you know... I don't know, maybe they didn't enjoy it last year. Maybe it was kind of hard and a little bit... stereotypically Soviet for people. But you know what I mean, you know. It's getting out there and then everything being the way, you know... How do I say this without getting stabbed with polonium, Andrew?
I don't think there is a way.
Basically, the reputation of Moscow is dodgy as heck. And I have a funny feeling that everyone found it a little bit dodgy last year. And that's the feeling, that's the vibe I get from this Autosport article. Because these are not people who aren't going to race their hearts out and don't believe that every... race matters. So for someone to be going, I'm not really bothered, and for his rival in the whole thing who stands to benefit from this going, it's a shame, but I'm not really that bothered either, it means that it probably was a little bit grim last year. So I think whilst people would be disappointed in some ways, there may be a certain sigh of relief across the grid if Moscow didn't push through. There hasn't been a follow-up on this article yet, so I imagine that they're still kind of waiting to hear from that one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They need to get a move on.
Yes. Well, it does need to be done quickly, because they need to, you know, they've got to get the cars, they've got to get all the pits, they've got to get everything out there. That'll all have arrived back at Donington, and will be being sorted out, ready to be pitched off to there or to Berlin, which is coming up soon. That should be a cracking race. That should have a skyline second only to the Paris one. Paris one was good, but Berlin is this year. It's sorry, I'm fanboying, but this year it's running from Alexanderplatz. Last year it was out at Tempelhof, which everyone said was fantastic, you know, but it was a great place, you got a great view and stuff, but I think that having the Alexanderplatz TV tower and the very just how you'd imagine Berlin architecture around that area of the former eastern sector would be really amazing for Formula E. It would be even better if it was in the evening, because it's kind of cool around there. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that one, actually.
Are you getting out to that one?
I'm not. No. I have a limited number of holiday days this year. I find they're being used up by other things. I was just having a little count. So no, I'm not getting out of that one. It's a shame. It was a short notice trip to Paris, and sadly, Paris was completely sold out. It was fantastically popular. It was totally, totally sold out.
Well, that's good news.
Oh, it's awesome news. Fantastic news.
For the sport, obviously not for you.
Not for me. No, no, no. I came back early and had the Eurostar chicken diet.
Yes.
So yeah, no, it was a shame because I would have liked to have stayed and gone to that. But it just wasn't possible. Not even Mr. Davison could grovel me some tickets for that one. They were totally gone. And you saw that on the TV. It was mobbed. Street.
Yeah.
Mobbed. Anyway, shall I stop talking about that for a minute? And just quickly take a couple of moments to remind you all about subscribing, rating, and reviewing the show. Many podcast apps let you do this, but the biggest podcast platform of them all is the egregious iTunes. I know it's a pain. I know it's not wonderfully intuitive, but it is a small way of letting Andrew and I know that you enjoy the show and the work we put into it. We are constantly working on ways to make a motoring podcast a little bit slicker to try and provide more and better content to you. We don't ask for money. We're not pimping sponsors. So if you could repay our efforts with a quick rating and a one-line review, we'd be incredibly grateful. We will even give you a name check at the end of the show to make you feel all warm and fuzzy about having left that review. We go on about it lots. If you listen to podcasts, to many other podcasts that don't do sponsorship, then you will hear it there as well. It makes a huge difference to where we sit in the iTunes rankings. That not only makes us feel good about stuff, but it means that when we go and we speak to motor manufacturers, when we speak to other people in the industry, we can say, well, actually, you know, we sit about here. This is our rating in iTunes. This is. And, you know, we're consistently in that top 20, top 25 automotive podcasts in the world, which is genius. So that kind of stuff is vitally important. I will stop warbling about it now and we'll just say thank you to those of you who've already done it. And thanks in anticipation for those of you who are just about to go off and fire up iTunes. Make a couple of clicks and leave a 5-star review. Should we move on from that now?
Yes.
Should we talk about something that makes us warm and fuzzy inside?
How about Ferrari?
Yes. this one is the one. I'm not quite sure how to even come to an introduction on this, but yes, New Jersey-based Ferrari has named a new CEO. Hooray, I hear you all cry, and then you hear it. Sergio Marchionne, the CEO of Fiat Chrysler, whom we have discussed at great lengths in the past. This is rather strange because you'd expect if you're splitting off a company in the way that the FCA did with Fiat earlier in the year, end of last year, then, you know, floating it separately, you would expect it to have a separate CEO, a separate management in place, because that's kind of what you expect that you're doing. You're splitting it out. And for FCA to not have done that is rather strange.
Mm.
What's most worrying of all to me is that Marchionne is all about revenue generation. I mean, we can see what he's doing with the Chrysler brand, at which point everyone goes, what Chrysler brand? Because basically in the US now you've got Ram, you've got Jeep, and many large investments made before the FCA merger and stuff, the Dodge Dart, all these kind of things. Are all being faded down and faded out, and quite what's going to happen with those factories, I just don't know. That's going to be a little bit strange. I mean, we've seen basically the Fiat strategy is make the Fiat 500, stretch it, inflate it. Oh yeah, and do something really, really dull as well that might appeal to some other people in North Africa, in terms of the Tipo and its saloon-based equivalent. So, revenue generation with Ferrari. I mean, he's declared out loud there will never be a Ferrari SUV.
However,
I think the clock's ticking on that one.
Yeah, but yeah, I think that's nonsense. He'll have to, and because the shareholders will demand it.
Basically, yeah.
And he's also talked about using the brand on luxury goods.
Wow, it's not as if Ferrari already sell. You know, maybe they could start selling shoes or jackets or baseball caps or sunglasses or watches or T-shirts or trousers or luggage and laptops. Oh, darn it! They're doing it all already. They have enough Ferrari branded stuff being good that they actually can fill an entire shop on Regent Street as it is. I don't understand how you can spread it any wider, really. And if you're saying, well, we'll do luxury goods for luxury people, then, you know, God. Really? Really? Are they not either going to shun it because it is so cheesy? Or do they not already own it?
Yeah.
No offence, but I think that if somebody turns up in a red Ferrari wearing a red Ferrari jacket and little Ferrari driving shoes, there's a little term that pops into my head about just what I think of them. It's similar to my thoughts about Gumball 3000 drivers. It's that kind of grouping. And yeah, okay, cool, but I feel that you there is a very strong risk of devaluing the brand, and I feel that there's it's just devaluing the brand, really. There was something else I was going to say, and it's completely skipped my mind because I was so incredibly appalled by that. Yeah.
Well,
you can't stretch it any wider. Sorry.
No. Yeah. No. It's. Yeah, I don't understand what revenue generation they can get out of it. I mean, there's talk of new Ferrari worlds or whatever they're called.
There's only a limited number of places you can put that. So there's one in Dubai, right? You could maybe have one in California, but even then I think the level of cynicism would be too high. You're going to try for one in China because, hey, we all try for one in China. And you could maybe try for one in India. Italy? Really?
That's your best bet.
It's a bit on the edge, isn't it? Well, you could try the Maranello experience at Maranello. It would be a serious case of Disneyfication, though.
Yep.
And I don't mean to diss the mouse. But there's a couple of interesting articles on this. If you want a really fawning, slightly wretchsome one, in my opinion, then there's one on The Verge. The one from Peter DiLorenzo, Auto Extremist, goes the other way. It's quite interesting. Yeah. He has opinions stronger than ours, I'd say.
Yes, and he's not afraid to use them.
And he's not afraid to use them either. So yeah, that's quite interesting. So anyway, yes, Ferrari, Marchionne spreads his reach much wider. That said, Andrew?
Yes. Ferrari Europe or Northern Europe had their best ever Q1.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations to them on that. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
It was up 15% on total shipments, which makes out at 1,882 units. Revenues grew by 8.8% to €675 million. And net profit was up 19% to €78 million.
Mm-hmm. And earnings per share are up 19% as well. So, yeah, I mean, a great quarter for them. So whatever happens next, they're certainly starting out in Europe, or in Northern Europe, on a great footing, which is cool.
Yep.
There's some stuff about, yeah, there. It's a very comprehensive financial statement that is part of their part of their press release. So if you are interested in company valuations and stuff, then it's all in that press release as well, along with the appropriate caveats around different model types and stuff. Meanwhile, another company having a successful time of it, and really marking a significant anniversary, is Toyota. Toyota have just built their 10 millionth vehicle manufactured in Europe. Almost three quarters of every Toyota sold in Europe and built in Europe. Fantastic stuff. I mean, they build in the UK. We know that they've been building at Burnison, just outside Derbyshire, since 1992. They also have an engine facility in North Wales as well, spreading it around. The Yaris, Auris, Avensis, and Verso are all built in Europe. So the Auris and Avensis are built here, aren't they? Yaris is built at Valenciennes in northern France. I happen to know. You can tell a French-built Yaris because it's got V at the start of its VIN number. Japanese ones have a J. Never mind. So, yes, anyway, great stuff. Well done. Congratulations, Toyota. That is great news.
Well done.
Cars built in Europe.
Yes, well done. Indeedy.
Mm-hmm.
Right, let's move on. The BMW i3 is getting an upgrade from July. There'll be a new battery option.
Yep.
Which will take the electric range from 80 to 100 miles up to 195 miles.
Yeah.
So this changes whenever I can find the... Yeah, we're going to go
so
to...
So whilst you're looking at that, there's an interesting thing about actually how this was released. And that's that whilst the press release came out yesterday or Monday, I actually got a little envelope through the post last week, because I'm a registered prospective buyer, having looked seriously at the i3 in the past. Mm. So I actually got, they actually sent out a preview thing before they sent out the press release to prospective owners. So there was a public release before the press release.
But it's going to be 94, that's amps, isn't it?
Or amps, yeah, amp hours.
And powers, 33 kilowatts per hour battery, which can be retrofitted.
That's a really interesting bit to me, is the fact that that can be retrofitted to existing vehicles because it's exactly the same dimensions. That's really cool. It's a little bit heavier, I think. Yeah,
it's 50 kilos heavier, so that slightly affects acceleration, but you're not in that to do.
It was quicker than the previous generation M3 beforehand, so frankly, you're not going to notice.
Yeah.
90-odd percent of the time, you ain't going to notice.
No. So I think that's a... once again, it's pushing the boundaries of people's perceptions of what an electric car can do. Mm-hmm. 195 miles, that's impressive. It's what we talked about previously. It covers so much of people's week, let alone
Okay, if this had been available before, when I was looking to buy the MX or one of these, because these were the last two cars, that is a significant changer. Because for me, previously, the electric range was always just a bit borderline, and I worried about, if it was in snow, or if it got held up, or if I had to take another route, then it wouldn't be quite enough, and that would be a pain. It wouldn't be a major problem, but it would be a pain. But that's enough of a range that's. I could pretty much get London and back on that.
Well, they're saying that if you've got the aircon or the heater on, then it's 125 miles.
Yeah.
Realistically, which is still...
But that's still great. That's still easy to London. That's easy to London. Plug in under Euston Station or wherever. Or wherever I want, because there's no congestion charge on it. plug it in for an hour, couple of hours, unplug it again, and I'm done. And I've got more than enough range to get back again with the aircon on, with whatever, you know, listening to music and chilling out on the motorways at 70. Yeah,
yeah,
perfect. The there is now no, yeah. Basically, that gets rid of the only concern I had about i3s.
Removes your range anxiety.
It does. Well, it was just that the range wasn't quite enough. It was just too much anxiety for the distances which I often have to cover. And yeah. That's just squashed that. That's sorted. Tick. Great. Yep. Excellent. Well done, BMW. Fantastic stuff. Other new stuff coming out is Porsche and the next generation Panamera. Everyone knows the next generation Panamera is coming close. Nobody's quite sure what it's going to be like, but it is thought that there is now going to be a Panamera family. So not just will it be the current Panamera, but there will probably be a wagon version as well, a sort of a sports tourer.
Well, can they have it so three people can sit across the back?
That's the other thing, is that people have been saying, okay, we've been losing out sales here because it is such a significant, because it is such a force, it has been such a four-seater, such a serious console in the back. There just isn't a middle rear seat.
No.
And I know that that's put...
Because I did have to remove it off my shopping list because of that.
Yeah, yeah, and that's therein lies the only reason.
Yes.
But I do know people who have removed it from their shopping list because... there isn't quite enough rear seating. When it folds, when the rear seat folds, you can't fit in whatever it is you need to fit into it. In their case, a couple of big boxes, which regularly get carted about. And as a result, they ended up buying a KN instead. But but yeah, that the wagon style and the five seats configurations is. It's going to be good. If the next generation Panamera looks anything like the Sport Turismo concept car from last year, then that's going to be great. We can expect to see those along in 2017. But it should be a nice looking car. I don't know. Porsche styling at the minute is great.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Right, moving on.
Another quickie. TVR. We've talked about the new generation TVR. And it will actually be unveiled. Its first public appearance will be at the London Motor Show, which I think is next week. I'm not really sure.
Is it not this week?
Is it?
I think it's this week.
I'm not really sure. I kind of knew that I'm busy enough this week, this weekend, and then next week that I'd have no idea. I haven't been able to keep an eye on it to find out exactly when it is. But yes, it is.
Yeah, Friday the 6th through to Sunday the 8th.
All right, okay, yeah.
At Battersea Evolution.
Which used to be Battersea Power Station.
Okay.
Which only has one chimney nowadays. Yeah, so it's around Battersea, that kind of area. Yeah, that should be great to see. And of course, the reason that the announcement that I saw was from Gordon Murray Design is that it's going to use the Gordon Murray Design, the iStream manufacturing process in a proper production car. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the pictures of that. That should be pretty cool.
Yep.
I'm in Wimbledon on Saturday. No, there's no chance of getting out of cousin's daughter's first communion thing. You guys see that?
No.
Although I know where I'd rather be.
Anyway, Alan.
One last one, and I meant to go buy my lottery ticket last week, and I didn't. I didn't get around to it. There is a McLaren F1 for sale. And cool. It's not just a McLaren F1 for sale. It is one of the very last of the I'm going to say standard spec, but the short tail McLaren F1s. It is chassis number 69. And it has under 3,000 miles. It's also black, dark-coloured wheels, dark-coloured interior. It is fantastically subtle example of the breed. As I say, it's available through McLaren Special Operations Heritage Arm, which, by the way, have a lovely lovely website. It doesn't actually show this anywhere on the website. It's been covered by pretty much every news outlet going. But yeah, so it's there and it's for sale. And I saw someone on Twitter commenting that it's for sale for £15 million. That's only 3 million. That's only, do the math, Sal. That's only £5 million per passenger.
Cool. Seems a bargain.
And if I had the money to spare, I would probably already run down there and put my money down. I absolutely adore that car. It is the car. You can have as many Beatty Veyrons and Chirons as you want. But the McLaren F1 is for me. It's one man's vision. And it's really one man's vision, but it's two of my absolute favourite automotive designers, in Gordon Murray and Peter Stevens.
It is a benchmark.
Oh, 6.1 litre, naturally aspirated V12, putting out 627 brake horsepower. I know that more than 100 brake horsepower per litre is becoming more and more common these days, but it's always turbocharged, and this is naturally aspirated. It has titanium toolkits. It has titanium wheel nuts. This one comes with all the stuff, all the books. It comes with the original Tag Heuer watch that came with them when you bought one. It's the whole thing. And it's not, you know, been in a number of crunches like the last one that was on the open market.
Well, no, it's been maintained by McLaren's, what do they call it, Special Operations Heritage Arm.
Yeah.
So, you know, no expense has been spared by the sounds of it.
Wonderful. None at all. Anyway, sorry, I shall stop getting all excited about it because I haven't got £15 million, sadly. But yeah, that's there. That's available if you want. The other thing that everyone's been pointing out is that somebody let loose that McLaren need a specific model of ancient compact laptop to maintain these because all the programs that run them for the telemetry and stuff has to all be plugged into a specific card that was made to fit in those laptops, and all the software is DOS-based. So yeah, McLaren have this stash of very old laptops, which they're trying to keep going. It probably means that if you do have one of those ancient compact laptops, you could probably ask a pretty penny for it. So, yeah. Anyway, yes, I think that's pretty much us for this week, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we seem to have flown through it.
Yeah, we do, actually. I thought we were going to be far more. I thought we were going to be longer.
I don't know if we didn't dwell on Ferrari very much.
No, I was worried we'd get all ranty and shouty, and then you'd have to edit it all out, which is what normally happens, which the listeners don't notice because it happens so seamlessly most of the time. So, yeah.
Thank you very much for the compliment.
That's all right. It's in there. Just quickly, a quick thanks to Clarky123456! ! I know that it took him a little while to find a username that hadn't already been used on iTunes for this week's praise. Thank you, mate.
Thank you very much. That is great that we've got another review.
Yes, your reluctance to be complimentary about my work is noted. But don't forget, between now and next week, then you can, of course, give us any feedback and share your thoughts, not just on iTunes, which you're going to run off and do right now, but also with us generally, at the show Twitter, which is @motoringpodcast on Instagram. You can get in touch with us on Facebook, and believe it or not, people are actually liking things on Facebook now, so Facebook must be showing them to someone. But also you can get in touch with us through the contact page of www.motoringpodcast.com, which is the hub of all of our activities. As I've said before, please don't forget to leave a review and a rating on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. It really does matter to us. Andrew, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, the best way would be via Twitter, where I can be found under @crackwindscreen. And how about if they want to get in touch with you personally?
Me? Once again, then Twitter is the way to do it, and I'm @AJPBradley. We'll be back next week. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.